What's up, and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. I'm in Pinheiro, São Paulo, Brazil. I'm going to do my best to do a podcast in all the cities that I go to this year. I've got a bunch of places that I'm going to, including Istanbul, Turkey, including Batumi, Georgia, just under Russia, Lima, Peru, might be back in Bulgaria as well. So there's a little bit of travel coming up, which I'm very excited about. Today I'm going to talk you through a couple of essays that I've posted on Instagram. I've been trying to post a lot of essays, but haven't really been doing the best job of like promoting them. So some of the views and the reach is a little bit down. And then I've had some days where I've made extra content in the one day. I'm really into the content, the C word. So for example, this week I just recorded a thing about Brazilian funk music, which is basically rap. I quite like it. You can see that reel on my Instagram feed. And if you're interested in this event that I went to in Santa Rita do Sapucaí, two to three hours north of Sao Paulo, I made a little video, a 5-minute video with a lovely couple who own an English school there called Be Bold. They kindly followed me around for a couple of hours. I want to do more video. I don't know. I don't always feel super comfortable. I don't always like seeing my face. I don't look at mirrors very often. I'm okay with my voice in a podcast. Seeing videos, not sure. Like, did a live stream last night with this online university, and I saw a little bit of the video. I'm like, I don't know if I need to see that. Don't know if I need to see that, but I had fun. And in fact, it's Thursday today, and I've been here for a week in Brazil, and I've done, I think, 8 talks and training sessions in 7 days, or I will have. Because I'm doing one more bonus one in about 2 hours. So it's been fun. It's been fun. I really enjoy Sao Paulo. I know Brazil is stressful and struggling in a lot of ways. A lot of the strategists that I meet up with, they tell me that when they're junior, they're earning, I don't know, it sounds like about $1,000 a month. And so, you know, I priced my masterclass pretty cheap compared to the US, but apparently it was too much. So I'm doing a little surprise pop-up masterclass before I get on the plane very shortly. So that's what's happening. I'm trying to think of what else I have to reflect on. The area I'm in, Pinheiros, it's a rich area, but it actually reminds me quite a lot of like the 1990s. A little bit like the 1990s Sydney, although Sydney's a much smaller city. Sao Paulo is a mega city. Is it 20, 22 million people in the area? And Sydney's 4 million. But a couple of blocks from where I am, there's about 8 to 10 music stores with drums and guitars all clustered together. And they're big shops. They're big stores. And there are quite a lot of bookstores, independent bookstores. There are vintage resellers. And I got to tell you, I don't see much of this stuff in Manhattan at all. Brooklyn probably had a lot more of it 12 years ago when I first moved to the US. But I'd say there's not even a lot of that in Brooklyn right now. And it just makes you realize how corporate the US is. And I've been out here, I caught up with a guy called Ian Beecroft. He used to work at Leo Burnett, and now he's doing sort of, I guess, artificial intelligence consulting, futurism. He's doing a lot of talks. We spent a lot of time together, and he was kind enough to pull me into some of his friend groups. And so I've met all these amazing Brazilians, like incredible, incredibly talented Brazilians, who, if they were in the USA, you can't say America and Latin America, that's the USA or North America, USA and Canada. They're like, they'd be the most famous like directors and music people, and we're just hanging out and having fun. It is a bit noisy where I am. You're going to hear some motorcycles and construction. I hope it's not too noisy. This microphone, it does pick up a little bit too much, so I've got to sort that out. Yeah, but talking to Ian, we were having another chat last night also with some locals, Urine and Alfonso, who's a big music guy, publisher. I call him the skinny Rick Rubin. He gets around a lot of the music industry in Brazil. Spent 25 years in London, was running, I don't know, maybe a record shop and then perhaps even a nightclub, or at least nights in a nightclub, playing Brazilian music at times, Brazilian, maybe house or funk, I can't remember, and jazz, as well as pop songs, and he's been back here. So it's been interesting just listening to the entrepreneurial journeys of people as well. And Ian and I were talking a little bit about our comparison when we're in Latin America as quote-unquote gringos. I really don't like that word. Everyone's like, it just means you're a foreigner. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't like it. And if you're gonna call me a gringo, I worked very hard in Ecuador to get a proper gringo title. So my formal gringo title, oh my gosh, those words came out strange. My formal gringo title is world champion number one gringo. And if you've been following along, that's because I did all the gringo stuff in Ecuador, such as they drove me up in a matter of hours to 4,000 meters. What's that? 13,000 feet above sea level. I've never been that high. I got out of the car, I nearly fell over because I couldn't breathe. And I couldn't breathe. And since then, I feel I get vertigo just watching like YouTube videos with a drone in them, or shot by drones. I'm like, oh my gosh, I sort of have vertigo. They got me an oxygen tank for some of my talks because we were up high. And I was running out of breath on stage. I got a sunburn on a rainy day. I don't think that's fair to call me a gringo for that. I'm Australian. Like, it's, we have very harsh sun there. I think it's like 40 to 50% of Aussies get skin cancer. I'm not competing about that. I'm just saying, I don't know if that really qualifies me as a gringo. And then the other thing that I continue to do is I continue to shake people's hands. And what I love about Latin America is often they'll respect it, but if they realize I'm just being a little bit awkward because I'm not sure what to do, they'll usually just push my hand out of the way and give me a hug. And in Brazil, this happened 4 years ago as well when I was here with Julian Cole doing talks at Facebook in our own classes. The Brazilian hug, at the very least, it lingers a bit. It's like a gentle rub on the back, a pat, maybe. And not one of those like fake, awkward, friend zone type of things. There's nothing more than friendship about it. I don't mean it in that way, but it's not one of those awkward hugs. It's legit. I love it. And then, yeah, different cities, they kiss on the cheek a certain number of times, a little bit like in France. And so, talking to Ian and comparing our experiences in Latin America, obviously we're aware that he has blonde hair, and he's tall, blonde hair, good-looking guy. So he brings that with him. I'm the opposite. I mean, 180 centimeters, but, you know, it's not tall. Well, then some of these photos are... Sometimes I'm tall. I'm like, I don't think of myself as tall. I have a cousin who's 6'5". Stepbrothers are massive. I think I was talking about this the other day on the pod as well. And I've got to say, I have more of a social life when I travel. And I'm like, is that just me? In New York, I just work and I stress and I work and I stress. And everybody's important. And that's cool. That's cool. But it does feel lonelier. Like when I travel, people will invite you to their places. I haven't been to any places recently, but it just seems like there's more community and social cohesion, less individualism and less self-importance. And Ian was saying, I don't think he'd mind me talking about this, but Ian was saying he feels like that in Chicago as well. Like, it's really hard to actually catch up with your friends because everyone's either working really hard, careerists, or just got other stuff on. And New York, you know, the story is, this has not really been my experience because I came in my early 30s with children, so I was sort of, you know, young people, even that age, they don't really want parents around. They don't really want parents around. It adds 10 years to your coolness, or decreases your coolness by whatever. And yeah, so you were saying similar in Chicago. And I come to all of these places. You know, I was in Bulgaria. I just got a call with Bulgaria as well. And Ecuador, places I go to, I always look up businesses for sale, apartments for rent, apartments for sale. And, you know, and then I go back to New York. I'm like, what am I doing? What are we doing? Because it's been good to me in a lot of ways. The thing about New York and the thing about running your own business is you just have to keep going. You have to keep launching, keep going. But it's tiring. And it's lonely. And sometimes I just think that's because of my brain. It's like a little workaholic in there. And it's not that I'm doing 60, 80 hour weeks these days. I try to keep it less than that. But there's no real joy or release for me. And I don't think that's unusual. I think a lot of you, since the pandemic, are feeling that way. I've done so many events this week and we start to get into some deeper, meaningful stuff. And a lot of people, 20s, late, let's say late 20s into the 30s especially, they don't know if they want to keep working in advertising. I've got to tell you, if you're running a company, you've got to work out how to keep these people invigorated, because the way the industry is right now, the business model, the pricing, the decreasing margins. I'm assuming that large truck was all in your ears just then. There's quite a lot of construction going on. I do like the architecture here. I really enjoyed it in Cumbaya in Ecuador as well. But yeah, like if you're in a position of power in an agency, fix it. Seriously, you're chasing people out of the industry. And if you're a marketer and you're hiring agencies, or even if you've got an in-house team, fix it. You're chasing people out of the industry. People are exhausted. One of the most common questions I get asked is like, how do you find inspiration? I sidestep it. I'm like, I don't like that word, because a lot of the stuff I talk about and write about, including right now, it often comes from a sense of desperation and pain. I wrote the book that I wrote because I felt pain. I needed to get those words out. I used a lot of frustrating situations, especially in my New York experience, not really from my Australian experience, but New York experience, in the book. I could point at paragraphs and go, here's what happened to lead me to write that. A lot of stuff I put on Instagram, it comes from conversations. Someone loses a job. Someone doesn't want to work in the industry. Someone's desperate to get in. I'm like, okay, I'll write about that. So I tap into that. I don't really seek inspiration. And I don't really get creative blocks anymore, because over the past 7 years, I don't know if I ever really did. I think it's one of those things that we think we have to have, and then we're just stuck and we're not sure what to do about it all. Obviously, that's a truism that wasn't very insightful. Yeah, if you relate to what I'm saying, like you're not alone and I'm not alone, because I'm getting these vibes and these conversations all over the world. I didn't mean to say that in a flexi way, but people are tired. They're tired. I know a few people who are crushing it, telling me they're having their best year right now, or last year was their best year. Great. I don't know, I think a lot of people are struggling. So let me see if any other reflections pop up, but what I'll do now is I'll go through a couple of essays. One's called When to Quit Your Strategy Career, and the other one's How to Fix a Strategy Team That's Swirling All Over the Place. If you want to see these, they're on my Instagram. I'll probably put some of these things up on LinkedIn as well. You can find that all at Mark Pollard. Coming up, I've got a Strategy Accelerator 4 weeks in October. You can DM me for details, or you can go to the Sweathead website. We have Media by Mothers, Maria Van Buskirk, doing a comms planning masterclass on Thursday, September 21. I've had a few little issues with the website. We relaunched it, but there's sort of some bugs and old information, because we split the website to make it safer. So there's a subdomain and a non-subdomain, and sometimes you have to update two versions of things, and I forget. So comms planning with Maria Van Buskirk. A lot of you interacted with her in the summer camp. The summer camp was really fun too. I think we nearly had 40 people complete a 4Cs. Last year, not a lot of people completed the assignment. And I was like, so what is this? Is the summer camp sort of something that people watch and that's enough? Or do people want to complete a project? You know, when you do launch things, and the reason I keep talking about this stuff is because I want you to launch things, you sometimes don't know what the product is until you get it into people's hands. And I have to tell you, I brought about 20 books to Brazil. I'm still trying to work out shipping here. It's super complicated. I'm going to lose money on my Portuguese book, sorry. I think I'm already about $10,000, $12,000 down. So if I ship it here, I can't sell it for the full price because it's so expensive for Brazilians. So I have to work out to sell it for less, but I'll pay the extra shipping to get it here, which could be $5,000 to $10,000. But what I'm thinking about, before I get into this essay, is I'm thinking about coming back to, if they let me, to Hacktown, this event I've mentioned a few times, next year. And possibly doing a little talking tour, maybe working out how to change some of my content, being a bit more theatrical, Portuguese translations, maybe bringing a few Brazilians with me to speak as well, like a little Wu-Tang clan. I was told in a DM that I should be charging $5 for my masterclass. I was like, I spent $2,000 to $2,500 to be here. $5 for a masterclass? Part of that DM also said I should be teaching for free. I should be teaching junior strategists for free. And I'm like, okay. I will have done 8 things. 7 of them were for free. And I have thousands of hours of free stuff online. And so I'm going to be talking about that today in this class that I'm going to be doing. And I want the younger people to understand. It's cool to have idealism. Like there's a stench of Marxism in a lot of the interactions that I have with people, and I'm open to all these ideas. I'm just not dogmatic about it. But I think you're tying yourself in a ridiculous pretzel if you hate capitalism and you're working in advertising. I know there's a sort of an activist vibe with a lot of people in advertising. You just got to be careful with that, because sometimes you're just trying to portray yourself as really noble. I don't like words like virtual signaling because of who uses it these days. I don't like that stuff. But just be aware that it's okay to be noble, but also you got to be effective for your clients. So sometimes you got to hold those two things in your head, but separately, and realize when they're in conflict. So telling me, whose business is teaching and talking, that's how I feed my family, that I should be teaching for free, that's just unrealistic. And also because I do a lot of free stuff. I probably have thousands of hours of material online, podcasts, Instagram. All right, let's get into this first essay. I just hope the microphone's not too loud, because there are trucks everywhere. So when to quit your strategy career? I think, first of all, it's a very personal, it's a very tough topic. I get the DMs, should I quit, when should I quit, I'm unhappy. But I do think there are a few signs that you can pay attention to. The first one is when you have 2 to 3 bad job situations in a row. Maybe having bad job situations is a norm or the norm. But if you're bouncing through places every 6 months and you've done it 3 times or so, maybe you're just trying to do a thing that is not suited to you, or that you're not suited for. It's okay. It's okay. 2 is when you find yourself unable to believe the hype anymore. I've had fun in agencies. It's an intense industry, advertising. I've had some fun, intellectual fun. You know, I think because I was doing stuff outside the agency world when I was younger, so 20 to 28 I was making a magazine, 20 to 25 I was writing for a lot of other magazines and hosting a radio show, putting on events. I think because I had that in me, I didn't really buy into hype that much. I mean, I interviewed Flavor Flav, and I think I was 19 or 20, Ice Cube, maybe 20, 21, you know, I was interviewing at a ridiculously young age pretty famous people, so I'm skeptical, a bit cynical, or you just realize you're just dealing with humans. But if you're really struggling with capitalism, if you're really struggling with advertising, if you're really struggling with strategy, like the values are just completely out of whack, you probably got to jump out. Maybe you can apply your skills in some kind of advertising adjacent field. I know a lot of people are interested in corporate social responsibility or working with brands and the concept of purpose. So that's available too. 3 is when you've felt you have a lot more to offer for a while. You know, the years of interagency workshops and bureaucracy and long hours, you can often feel that you have more to contribute than what can fit into a creative brief. I'm being dramatic. It's very simplistic. Because obviously strategists do a lot more. They often help teams work better together. Not always, but often. They host workshops, do research. Maybe they help shape the business of the business that they're in. They do a lot more, but if you're yearning to do something bigger, something creative, you got to work out how to do that. So those you just get frustrated, resentful. Another one is if the strategy life is really costing you your mental health and relationships. If you're just away from people that you want to be with, if your mental health is just bad, and it's been like that for a very long time, it might be time to get out. And I know there's a version of what I'm about to say floating around the internet, I think. So it's sort of meme-like. It's not really a meme, but it is meme-like. But I think it goes like, do you have bad mental health, or are you just living in the wrong city around the wrong people? And that's why I've really appreciated traveling again, because, you know, I'm trying to film videos and I'm trying to experience myself in a different way. I'm trying to bully myself to take more risks. And then I physically feel different. I'm going to go back to New York tonight and I'm probably just going to have to turn off a bit for various reasons. And that's not me. But I would say that there's been, I'll be indirect as much as I can. I feel like sometimes people maintain stories about you to you. And I'm like, I don't do that to people. I don't tell people who they are or what they are and maintain a story about someone for 25 years, 45 years. I don't do that. But other people do. And then when you travel, you're like, I don't know. I feel like I'm actually a bit of a different person from the story. But if you're sensitive, a little bit meek, a little bit quiet, introspective, maybe you buy into the story that you're being told about you, and then later you realize it's a way to control you. Five, if you just think advertising is useless, the thing that's kept me around it is the people. I love strategists. I love the conversations that we can have. They're open, they're vulnerable. Strategists are often students, they research, so they can bounce from topic to topic. They're observational. They're not usually super domineering personalities, which tire me out. But if you think advertising is completely useless, get out. Six is you're bitter through and through. You know, if you just find yourself resenting the advertising industry, if you log on to LinkedIn or Instagram or Twitter and you see someone in the industry posting some stuff and your immediate reaction is just jealousy and anger and all the foul feelings, just don't be like that. Maybe you need to get out. Seven, if you can't find somewhere that captivates you to work at, maybe that's a high benchmark. And maybe that's unfair for a company or a brand or an agency to have to captivate you. That if you can't buy into the story of where you're working, or the story of what you're doing, or the story of the industry you're in, you need new stories. And that means you're going to have to leave. So I'll just repeat them. When to quit your strategy career. I'm not telling you to, by the way. I mean, I still kind of have a strategy career. I do consulting and I do training, but I've formed a different shape of a career around it. So that kind of stuff's available to you too. So when to quit your strategy career? When you have 2 to 3 bad job situations in a row. Let's go with three. Three. When you find yourself unable to believe the hype anymore. Three. When you felt you have a lot more to offer for a very long time. Four. If the strategy life is costing you your mental health and relationships. Five. If you think advertising is useless. Six. You're bitter through and through. Seven. If you can't find somewhere that captivates you to work at. Gonna do another essay now. Again, you can find these on Instagram, at the very least, possibly on LinkedIn. How to fix a strategy team that's swirling all over the place. Look, I don't have numbers for this, but I talk to a lot of people. And I don't mean this in an egotistical way, but I think I interact with a number of strategists that must put me in like the top 3 people in the world who interact with strategists. It's not a thing to boast about, don't worry, but I'm trying to justify my where I'm coming from with some of this stuff. And I don't know, it's messy out there, come on. I know I'm repeating a point that I've made a few times lately, but maybe it's 10 to 20% of agencies and strategy teams that are solid, and the rest are kind of swirling and messy and frustrated. Don't feel listened to. So let's see how to fix a strategy team that's swirling all over the place. So a lot of strategy teams are like headless chickens in a whirlpool all over the place. This happens in companies that are new to strategists, where strategy leadership isn't taken seriously and everyone is just trying to survive the politics. I do think PR firms struggle with this. A lot of them have tried to bring in strategists and it doesn't quite work. There's a bunch of reasons for it. I think at the very least is because PR clients don't want that kind of thinking. It's a more literal, control-oriented culture. Plus, PR firms are usually matrix organizations, so very individualistic, and in many of the larger ones, the senior people are encouraged to compete against each other. And they know that if they don't, they could lose their job. Alright, so maybe this is pretty straightforward, but I think first step with fixing a strategy team that's swirling all over the place is like clarify the mission of the team. And that might involve needing to clarify the creative and or strategy philosophy of the company. Put it on half a page, maybe a page. Put it in a Google Doc. Get your team to contribute to it, although these things need one strong voice. got to clarify the mission. Vision and mission are interesting. I don't use them too much. The way that I like to use the word vision is to complete this sentence. The vision is... Hang on, let me say that again. Sorry, there's a guy just staring at me. It's kind of off-putting. I've got a phone out on the street and I was told not to do that. Yeah, this sentence, a world in which, dot, dot, dot. So a vision, it can have this format, a world in which. And the words that you put in there is like, how is the world different because of your work? Mission is how you're going to do it. So let's say with Sweathead, a world in which strategists don't feel so isolated in their work. How are we going to do it? We're going to form a gang and teach them how to be good at their jobs. Simple language, right? None of this holistic, synergistic innovation. So that's the mission. Two, state of strategy philosophy. Okay, I guess I was hinting at this before. Is your philosophy about building famous brands, conversion, business transformation? Okay. You want to build your frameworks and templates from this philosophy. Most of the big, well-known agencies have a pretty clear creative or strategy philosophy, and you would expect their frameworks and templates to bring that philosophy to life. It prevents swell. Someone literally put an aquarium, an empty aquarium, right next to me, and they're taking photos of it. What's happening? What is this? It's so awkward, standing right next to me. Oh my god. Often people ask, how do I write an inspiring creative brief? I say, well, what's the role of a creative brief in your company? And also, what's the role of creativity in the company? Because without that, you're just going to have a generic creative brief, and that leads people to swirl. Three, establish process goals. So focus on process goals such as how often you teach each other, how often you review the team's work together. That'll keep you focused on the work, not the outcome. Going to do 10 training sessions this quarter. We're going to have 5 of the team present this quarter to the whole company about the work that we're doing for 5 minutes. They're process goals. Outcome goals are, we're going to win an award. The process goals, they give you a sense of momentum and allow you to focus on internal and intrinsic needs, desires, satisfaction. 4 is increase your team's visibility. Get your team in front of your company more often. Ask them to share work and their research. This will lead to a better understanding and possibly opportunity. You kind of have to sell the team. If you've got someone who really knows TikTok, get them up to show 5 hilarious things from TikTok from last week. That kind of stuff might give that person a sense of confidence and momentum, a sense of energy, and the creative team, or whatever company you're in, the creative team might say, hey, can you bring that person into the next project? 5, ask your team for ideas. Every month, ask what's one thing we could do better, or what's one thing we need to fix. I used to start my strategy team meetings with the question, what's a risk you've taken in the past week, and how did it go? I'm trying to establish the culture. Repeat, 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 repeat. Leaders, you have to repeat, 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 repeat. What's one thing you've tried, or one risk you've taken in the past week, and how did it go? Signals that I want people to take a risk. But also, that the point of it is to learn. When I finish the training sessions that I do, I usually will say, don't be overwhelmed if this is all new to you. Just try to work out how to do one of these things on your next project. What's one thing you can apply to the next project? And then the next project, you ask the same question. And over time, you improve. So there you go. There's 2 essays. I'll keep this episode a little bit short. Like I said, we've got 4-week accelerator that I'm teaching in October coming up. Sahar Bradis is doing a masterclass on the award-winning mindset for creative briefs in October. September is Maria Van Buskirk. 3-hour masterclass on comms planning. It should be really fun. Comms planning is cool. If you're built for comms planning, it's really, really cool. It's one of those jobs that it doesn't really threaten many other people in the agency, because most people see comms planning as a way to make more work, but hopefully also better work. And people see comms planners as people who can really help them sell in ideas. Okay, what else? If you're in Batumi, Georgia at Ad Black Sea, come say hi. That's in September. I'm apparently running an award jury thing starting next week with a few people, or maybe I'll get a conversation happening and record a chat with them in Georgia. I want to do more of that stuff. Turkey, if you're in Istanbul, Turkey, let me know, because I'm probably going to do an event on September 19th. And then we've just announced Lima, Peru. I believe it's October 26th. Talking to people about Mexico City first week in November. So there's lots of stuff happening. You can find me on Instagram at Mark Pollard. If you like, give us a little rating, kind of review. See you next time. Peace. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend, subscribe to our newsletter, find us on Instagram or LinkedIn at Sweathead. And if you're interested in finding out about our strategy, memberships, company training, or books, visit sweathead.com. Whoop, whoop.